16. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Grease Jolly.
"Let my sister go," Grease said. "She had nothing to do with any of this."
The two Furia standing before him didn't speak, didn't move, didn't blink. Truth be told, they were starting to give him the creeps, even more than the enormous depiction of Roth's golden eye staring down from the ceiling. The eye was ringed with fire, and seemed to be burning through him with each passing moment. Ever since Princess Rhea had pointed him out at the city gates, he'd been told nothing. He was separated from his sister and brought to the Temple of Confession, hauled to this cavernous space, where the vaulted stone ceiling hung like a stormy sky, and stripped to his underclothes. The walls were covered in sins, scrawled by the faithful seeking forgiveness. "I bore false words to my wife. I lusted after the baker's daughter. I spoke ill of my father." Some of the truths were written in dark, shaky letters, perhaps smudged with wet ash, while others were red and thin and gave Grease the shivers. Worse still were the words carved directly into the stone, shallow grooves that spoke of violent crimes. "Cut out her filthy throat. Gutted the nasty child like a pig. Beat him! Beat him! Beat him bloody!" Grease shivered.
"I'm cold," he said. "Can I please have my clothes?"
The Furia didn't move, didn't react. Grease wondered whether his thoughts had made it to his lips.
"Please," he said, begging now.
He'd screwed up, but he couldn't live with himself if anything happened to Shay.
"I'm the thief. Punish me. Confine me to the stockades. Just let her—"
One of the Furia pushed back her red hood to reveal an expressionless face. He was taken aback by her pristine skin, her piercing eyes, her sunrise red hair. He had to admit that the woman was almost as eye-pleasing as Princess Rhea. She moved so fast that Grease didn't have a chance to defend himself. Her foot swept behind him, kicking out the back of his legs and bringing him to his knees. He grunted, squinting through the web of long, tangled hair that fell into his face. The Furia who had struck him was back in position as if nothing had happened. He opened his mouth to speak again, and then thought better of it. He pushed the hair away from his eyes and waited. After a while, his knees began to throb, but when he tried to stand, the other Furia glided forward and swung her fist in an arc. Again, he was too slow to block the attack, her knuckles colliding with his jaw, rocking him back. Half naked, lying on the cold, hard ground, he rubbed his jaw. He'd been in plenty of street fights, but had never been hit like that. Slowly, shielding his face with his arms, he sat up, returning to kneeling position. The Furia ignored him once more. Eons passed, his bruised face pounding, his knees aching, the confessions of sinners seeming to scream at him from the walls.
"Thief! Fornicator! Thief! Fornicator! Thief! Thief! Thief!"
And then the wooden door opened and his heart stopped. They were actually here. Not the foot soldiers, but the generals themselves, the Furies. The moment they entered, the two Furia parted to let them pass, closing ranks as soon as their holy masters were clear. The three wore no hoods, their hair as red as hungry flames. They were all as attractive as their foot soldiers, but in a harsh way, their jaws angled and strong, their eyes dark and fierce. Grease tried to hold their gaze, but eventually looked away.
"You have been accused," the one in the center said. "Confess your sins."
Her bark made Grease flinch. Grease didn't try to deny it, there was no point. All that mattered was his sister.
"I am a thief," he said. "I will accept my punishment. 5 days in the stocks? 10? Name it."
The two Furies on the sides laughed. The one in the center did not.
"Stupid boy," she said. "Our punishment is not of men. It is of wrath."
Something about the way she said it made Grease want to punch himself in the face.
"I will accept it," he said. "Yes, you will. Which hand do you use to steal with?"
The question took him aback.
"What?" "I don't know. My left, usually.
The third Fury grabbed him by his neck, shoving him to the ground. The second Fury jammed a knee into his chest, pushing all her weight on him until he could hardly breathe. And the first Fury, the one who had spoken, forced his left arm flush against the cold stone. She raised a hand, gripping a blade, its sharp edge glinting in the coloured light refracting through the temple's mosaic windows.
No!
Greece shouted, but it came out as a squeal. His windpipe pinched. Her arm came down. A blade came down. Greece screamed. Darkness swept in like a black tide of unconsciousness. A kindness under the circumstances. Greece awoke from the nightmare, shivering and panting, trying to catch his breath. He felt cold, so cold, and yet sweat pooled on his face, stinging his eyes.
Oh gods, oh gods, oh gods!
Shay!
He needed to wake Shay up and get them the hell out of the holy city. Forget the main gates. He'd take them down the coastline, past the cryptlands. He tried to rise, but something held him back. He blinked in the dim lighting, trying to figure out what was happening. Thick leather straps ran across his body, securing his chest, arms, torso, and legs.
What in Roth's name?
He said. Someone sniffled in the dark.
Who's there?
Greece said.
Oh, Roth, I'm sorry,
someone whimpered.
I didn't know. I was so angry.
That voice.
That voice.
Rhea?
I didn't know what they would do. I thought they'd lock you up, make you do penance for your crimes. I didn't know.
Oh, gods.
Greece didn't want to look, but knew he had to. He lifted his right hand high enough so he could see it, flexing his fingers. He cocked his head and tilted his gaze to the left, raising his other. The stump was wrapped in white cloth, the blood soaking through in several spots. Bile rose up in Greece's throat so fast he couldn't swallow it back down. The vomit dribbled down his chin, staining his already filthy shirt. Not possible. Not real. A wicked nightmare. Had to be. It didn't even hurt. A trick. They'd played a trick. A mean, nasty trick to teach him a lesson, one he would pretend to learn and then be on his way, off to another town, his sister in tow.
"Where is Shay?"
he asked. Something throbbed along his left wrist, but he ignored it. If he didn't look at it, it wasn't real.
"Is that her name? I swear I didn't know about your sister. Please forgive me,"
Rhea said. He could just make out her slumped form in the corner of the small room. She was still wearing her black dress of mourning. She'd never looked so vulnerable, so pathetic, a far cry from the seductress he'd always known her to be. She didn't look or sound like a woman grown any more. She was just a broken girl.
"You're forgiven,"
Greece said quickly. A rotting lie. He'd never forgive her if something happened to Shay. He was feeling light-headed, the room starting to spin. Pain lanced up his arm.
"Just tell me where my sister is. Please, please, before I pass out. I have to know. You shouldn't have left me in the crypt. I was scared. That scream.
I know. I was wrong. I'm sorry."
Spots flashed before his eyes, blinking like dying gold stars.
"I forgive you, too, princess,"
he was pleading now.
"Tell me, where is she?" "They killed her,"
Rhea said.
"Not real, not real, not real."
"Oh, Roth, I didn't mean your sister,"
Rhea said.
"I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I didn't mean your sister."
Greece clung to those words like a man adrift in the ocean with only a single wooden plank to keep him afloat. The princess continued to apologize, her voice rising hysterically.
"Stop,"
Greece said, blinking away the spots obscuring his vision. Rhea clamped her mouth shut, her wet eyes locking on his.
"Who did they kill?"
"My aunt,"
Rhea said.
"The queen in the north."
Grease blinked.
What?
How? Why? They blamed her for the Dread King's death. They executed her. They killed her.
I'm sorry, Grease said, not knowing what else to say.
My father is livid,
she went on.
There is talk of revenge, of war. Everything is falling apart. We should have left together last night. We should have gone away from this horrid city and sailed across the great ocean and found another life, a better life.
This was the girl Grease had fallen for, spontaneous, half-crazy, rebellious. But that was over the moment she pointed her accusing finger at him at the city gates and involved his sister. All kindness left his tone.
We didn't leave, Grease said.
Where is my sister?
Princess Rhea covered her face with her hands. Her body shook silently. A shadow entered Grease's body, twisting and thickening and squeezing around his heart, which seemed to slow in his chest. The world was fading to black again. Blessed, blessed darkness.
They found it,
Rhea said.
No, gods no. Anything but that.
His denial was gone, torn away by the truth of Rhea's words.
Take my other hand. Take my head. Take me, 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 me. They found her mark,
Rhea said, and then she rose and fled from the room, her sobs echoing into eternity.
17. The Northern Kingdom, the Howling Tundra. Anise Gehrig. Something wasn't right. Well, something besides the fact that Anise was wandering an endless tundra with a witch-cursed knight who'd once been her childhood friend. She couldn't quite put her finger on it, but whatever was eluding her mind kept gnawing away at her as they trudged through the snow, which was up to Anise's knees and arms, Terrin's, armoured calves. It wasn't her half-empty stomach either, although that clearly wasn't right. She knew she was in trouble when the snow started to look like icing on an enormous poppy seed cake. She stopped. Terrin's long strides carried him a bit further before he realized she wasn't beside him anymore. He turned and said,
"What is it?"
"We're going back,"
she said.
"To where?"
"Castle Hill." "No, to the edge of this hell-frozen tundra. And then we're heading south for Gearhert. We're going to find my brother. And then we can escape north. Together."
"It's not safe,"
Terrin said.
"And this is. Do you even know where we are? This is my life. My decision, and we are turning around. Immediately."
"No."
She gritted her teeth.
She hated the way he always said things with such finality, like her opinion mattered little and less. She didn't care that they shared body warmth, or had a strange moment of truth. She could consider all that later, if at all. Now she had to take matters into her own hands.
"Stop me!"
She whirled around and sprinted in the opposite direction. Well, more like slogged, her boots clomping through the snow. She heard his heavy feet give chase, and she waited until she could sense him almost upon her. She dropped flat to the snow. Terrin let out a surprised cry and tripped over her, rattling like a tin can dropped down a staircase. Anise was up in an instant, taking advantage of the opportunity. She already had a handful of snow, which she shoved through his eye slit, not caring if she poked his eyes a little in the process. She even added a solid kick to his armored ribs. He flailed, scrubbing at his eyes, but she didn't stop to watch. She was off and running. She knew he would catch up eventually, but by then she hoped he'd have reconsidered. It was a foolish, desperate plan, but it was all she had. She hazarded a glance back. Terrin was still down, prying off his helmet. She almost stopped to look. She desperately wanted to see his face, but then remembered how defiant he was when she'd seen just his hand. Spinning around, she charged onwards.
Just in front of her, an enormous white form rose up from a snowdrift, unleashing a roar that rattled her frozen bones. She tried to stop, but her feet skidded on the ice, kicking out from under her. Gravity did the rest, slamming her down violently on her tailbone. By then, the massive ice bear loomed over her, rearing up on its hind legs, slicing the air to ribbons with its razor-sharp front claws. Its gaping jaws revealed a row of glistening, fang-like teeth. The white-furred monster was twice the size of Terin, although Anise couldn't help but notice they had a similar disposition. She tried to scoot back, but slammed into a drift, chunks of frozen snow raining down on her face. Without other options, she rolled, just as the bear slammed its paws onto the ice where she'd been a moment earlier. Leaning back, she kicked out with all her might, connecting solidly with the beast's head. This seemed only to enrage it even more. It lunged for her, snarling, raking a claw across her face. Heat bloomed like a snowflake flower on her cheek as she was knocked back. She slid along the ice, blood dripping from her chin. She tried to stand, but her feet slipped again. The bear seemed to have no such problem, its claws digging into the ice as it propelled itself toward her, its black eyes focused on its meal. Anise finally found her footing, diving to the right, the creature punching her shoulder as it flew past. She grunted and twisted into another fall, as graceful as a one-legged woman learning to dance the northern jaunt. It was desperation time, and Anise was always willing to cheat rather than lose a fight. She squatted in the snow, her heart racing, her chest heaving, her shoulder throbbing, her face bleeding. She packed ice balls as tightly as she could, ignoring the pain and fear. When the bear charged, she let loose a barrage, pelting it in the face, in the eyes, in the mouth. All those years growing up in the snowy north with a pack of bratty lordlings as her only companions were finally paying off. Arch would be proud. The ice bear squealed, rearing up, its forepaws swatting fruitlessly at the air, trying to ward off this new attack that it clearly didn't understand.
"Eat ice, bear!"
And he screamed through gritted teeth, hitting another bullseye. The bear shook its head, whipped around and took off, loping along the frozen ground with long, heavy strides. A full retreat. For now, at least. A moment later, Terin came running up, his black helmet back on his head, though it was still crusted with hard-packed snow.
"What in the frozen hell are you?" he said.
"A princess of the north," Anise said. "Nice of you to show up, protector. Now stay the frozen hell out of my way. I'm going back."
She stomped off, soaking up the blood on her face with the snow left in her hand.
"I could tell the story, but no one would ever believe me," Terin said, walking beside her.
"I don't care," Anise said.
Her shoulder was killing her, her face was stinging, and the injury to her tailbone was worse than she'd originally thought, but still, she did care. She cared that Terin was finally listening to her, that he wouldn't stop talking about her victory over the ice bear. She cared deeply, but refused to show it. She wasn't sure why.
"I'm sorry," Terin said.
Her head jerked toward him. She wasn't used to hearing apologies.
"For what?"
"For your mother."
Anise sighed, unable to maintain the fire that had raged in her belly since her encounter with the bear. She stayed silent, unsure what to say.
"I hate myself for it," he went on. "She was a wonderful person, inside and out."
Anise could keep silent no longer.
"I didn't even know her. To the very end, she was a stranger to me."
"She shouldn't be," Terin said.
Anise frowned.
"Why not? She barely spoke to me."
The memory of the last time her mother spoke to her, in the Tower of Mirrors, played in her mind.
"I'm sorry I couldn't be there for you. It was the only way I knew how to protect you. I wish I'd been better. Stronger. You are better. You are stronger. And I'm so proud of you."
"You're wrong," Terin said. Your mother isn't a stranger to you. I see so much of her in you.
Anise scoffed. She scraped her knotted black hair through her fingers.
Yes, my hair is looking particularly sunny this time of year. And I think I've shed 2 stones since we started walking across the tundra.
She sashayed her hips like she'd seen other girls do as they walked past the lordlings. Terin shook his head.
You have her eyes, he said.
She opened her mouth to contradict him, but he held up a hand.
Not the colour, the intensity. When your mother put her mind to something, she did it. Like saving you and your brother. She was determined. And here we are.
Anise wanted to jest, to laugh his words away, but her desire to know more overwhelmed her usual quick tongue.
What else? She asked.
Though she couldn't see it, she was sure Terin smiled beneath his mask.
Your stubbornness.
Anise rolled her eyes, but couldn't argue with that. They continued on, and again Anise felt the gnawing, some important truth eluding her.
You defeated a bear. An ice bear, Terin said after a while. I still can't believe it.
It's not like I killed it.
Playing it down, smiling on the inside, grinning through the pain. He shook his head.
You are something else.
It was the most she'd heard him talk, sounding more like the energetic boy she knew growing up. The thought made her incredibly sad. Nibble, nibble. Gnaw, gnaw. It hit her and she slammed to a stop. This time Terin was ready, echoing her movements. She let loose a string of imaginative curses, and Terin took a step back, as if afraid he would become her next victim. Or perhaps appalled at her language, which was decidedly unladylike. Then again she was no lady, something she'd proven time and time again.
Frozen hell!
It was no wonder it had taken her so long to realize something so important. Her entire life she'd assumed that by the time the Dread King was dead and gone, Arch would already be of age. The laws were clear. The eldest male son had rights to the throne once he came of age at 18, only after both his parents, the king and queen, were deceased. Eldest daughters be damned. Because her father always seemed invincible, Anise had never considered the possibility that this law could work in her favour, in the event that Wulfric Garrick I died early. And even then, her mother would have become the ruling monarch in her father's stead. But that's not what happened. And no one else had given her the slightest consideration, not even her uncle. Because she wasn't of age either. She was only 17 when her father died and her mother was executed. Now, however, she was counting days.
Princess?
Anise,
Anise said.
Anise, what is it? What's wrong?
Anise's face was starting to hurt from the deepness of her frown amidst the biting cold. She recounted just to make sure, but she came up with the same answer. Today was the day. Her 18th name day. She was finally of age, and both her father and mother were dead. She closed her eyes. Her eyes flashed open.
I am the queen.
Your uncle will realize the truth soon enough,
Terin said leagues later. Finally, finally, Anise could make out the end of the infernal tundra. She looked forward to the cover of trees and rolling hills, blocking the frigid wind's eternal sting. Yes, she agreed.
He will hunt you down.
Yes.
He will try to kill you, or accuse you of the same treason he laid on your brother.
Yes.
Anise felt numb and not from the cold. This was never her plan. She never wanted this. She never even wanted to be a princess, much less the Queen of the North.
Anise shook her head. It doesn't matter. None of it. Not my name day. Not coming of age. Not my claim.
Lord Griswold has already usurped power, and I will support Arch as he tries to reclaim the crown. It wasn't what she truly wanted, but it was better than claiming the throne herself. Taryn's gloved hand slid down her arm to her fingers. She stared at it, wanting to squeeze his finger so badly, but instead let her hand drop to her side.
"Queen, the laws don't work that way," he said.
"Don't you start calling me that. I'm Anise. Not princess. Not queen. Anise."
"How about Bear Slayer?"
Anise couldn't hold back her smile.
"Although I must point out that I didn't actually kill the bear, I will accept that. It's better than Mammoth and Queen of the North."
"Stop," Taryn said. "You are too hard on yourself. You are...
Anise held her breath, trying to fill in the blank left by his unspoken words. There were so many words she wished he would say, could say, but she knew they were impossible and untrue.
"Strong," he finished,
which wasn't the worst word he could have chosen.
"You are strong, Bear Slayer, like your mother."
"Or I just played Snow Wars too much as a child," Anise said.
"Regardless, the North needs someone strong."
"My uncle is strong,"
Anise pointed out. "He was probably already fortifying Blackstone and Raiders Pass, moving soldiers from the Black Cliffs of Darin."
"But not kind. A monarch needs to be both."
"Have you met my father?"
"Your father is gone. And just because he ruled by fear didn't make him right. You would rule differently. Better."
Anise couldn't take another false compliment, nor another reference to her ruling the realm. She turned away, heading toward the first hill to the south.
"The royal tailors wouldn't be able to procure enough material to make my coronation gown," Anise said.
Taryn fell in beside her.
"Why do you do that? Always jest about yourself."
"Because if I don't, someone else will," Anise said.
Taryn said,
"You are more than what stupid lordlings think you are. I have seen more.
Says the ice bear who called the snowman white."
Taryn sighed.
"This isn't about me."
"Well, it should be. You hate the way you look so much, you cover yourself up. At least I don't hide my face."
"Your face is fine."
"Fine? Oh, I'm so glad it's not boring and plain like I thought."
"More than fine,"
Taryn said. And something about the way he said it made Anise's breath catch in her throat.
"Stop. Just stop,"
he continued.
"But my face. People would run. Children would run."
"Yes," Anise said. "You are a monster from the hinterlands, all right. Straight from a nightmare. But I won't run. I won't even scream. You must remember the way I stared down that ice bear."
Taryn laughed.
"How could I forget? You've got the claw marks on your face to prove it."
Anise was tiring of this conversation. The tundra fell away behind them as they crested a rise. She couldn't hold back her smile as she took in the landscape, a sweeping vista of snow-covered land and trees rolling out like a royal carpet. A splash of sunlight broke through the clouds, warming her face.
"We will find Arch, and I will remind him of my age, and then I will formally relinquish all rights to the crown," Anise said.
"No,"
Taryn said.
"You cannot."
Anise let out a rapid breath, losing patience.
"It's not your choice."
"Look,"
Taryn said, pointing downslope. He grabbed her hand and dragged her down the hill into the valley, where several large oaks provided a canopy against the snowfall.
"What?"
Anise said, not understanding.
"Here,"
Taryn said. He crouched, plucking something from the ground. A tiny flower, with rosy-cheeked petals and a long green stem.
"A hope flower. So what?"
Anise said. It was beautiful, even with the frost forming around the edges.
Do you know how the Hope Flower got its name?
Terran asked, twirling the stem between his thumb and forefinger. Seeing the enormous black-armored knight spinning the tiny flower was almost comedic.
I didn't know there would be a test,
Anise quipped.
No, I can't say that I do.
She could just make out his eyes through the slits in his helmet. In the shadows they looked black, just like the blood running through his veins.
This flower can grow in even the coldest temperatures, so long as the soil is exceptionally fertile. When the first explorers trekked the land beyond the Mournful Mountains, it was this flower that gave them hope that they could grow crops and survive the harsh winters.
It was a nice story, but didn't change anything.
It's still just a flower.
As are you, my queen. And you shall give hope to the North when they need it the most. Happy name day, Anise.
He handed her the flower. She paused for a moment, but then took it. Terin had insisted on keeping the flower, even though Anise said it would only die. She was done arguing, at least until they found her brother and Sir Dietrich. Surely they would understand her point of view and help her talk some sense into the armored knight. The entire situation was stuffed. They were trudging through the valley, still leagues upon leagues away from Gearhead. They were some pair. A queen who didn't want to be queen, travelling with a knight too ashamed to show his face. And yet Anise felt alive. More alive than she'd felt in a long time. Being cold didn't matter because she was free. Free of making pointless appearances at her father's court. Free of curtsying and making small talk with the insipid lords and ladies at Castle Hill. Free of thick stone ramparts and groaning metal gates. Despite the fact that she was surely being hunted in every major castle in the north, Anise had never felt a greater sense of freedom, almost as if she had escaped across frozen lake to the hinterlands.
"Tell me something," Anise said. "Last I saw you, you were a scrawny pipsqueak with less muscle in your entire body than I had in my little finger."
"Thanks for that colourful description," Terin said.
"You're welcome. So what happened? Did your training with the Royal Army really help you that much? I mean, you're huge now."
"A time of growth."
Anise didn't believe him.
"The witch's concoction. Did it change you in any other ways?"
"You mean besides thinning my skin and turning my blood black? Besides the malicious voice in my head that screams for blood?"
"Yes," Anise said. "Besides all that."
Terin shook his head.
"You're unbelievable."
"So I've been told. Now tell me the truth."
"The truth is a moving target," Terin said. "Sometimes I think my whole life is a lie. That I am a lie. But to answer your question, yes, the witch's potion seemed to enhance me physically. I grew taller and bigger, faster than normal children my age. My stamina increased as well, along with the shortness of my temper. That is eventually why I joined the army. It was the only place I thought I might find a normal life."
"Did you?"
He didn't answer for a long time, the only sounds their feet crunching through the snow. The storm had finally abated, the sky a sheet of white, darkening around the edges as the sun dipped precariously toward the horizon. Anise waited patiently for his response. She was getting more used to the lengthy silences between them. They entered a pine forest, the trees ramrod straight and lined up in perfect rows. This was no natural wood. The trees had clearly been planted. Terin rested a hand on her arm and stuck a finger to the spot on his mask that covered his lips. They crept through the tree farm silently, eyes roving from side to side. The trees thinned out as the wood ended, giving way to a stone structure. A barn of some sort, with a wide opening big enough for carts laden with timber to be pulled through. Inside the barn, Anise could see stacks of freshly cut wood, ready for transport. The cart, however, stood idle, a horse hooked to the front, stamping its feet in the cold, hot breaths pluming from its mouth and nose. A small distance from the barn was a matching grey stone house. It had a squat chimney, and smoke was curling from the apex. "Where is the owner?" Anise wondered. The wooden door suddenly banged open, and Terrin grabbed Anise, shoving her roughly behind a tree before ducking behind another. Across from each other, they peeked out. Soldiers. Anise's heart hammered in her chest. There were four of them, garbed in shiny mail over wool coats, steel swords hanging loosely from hip scabbards. On their chests was emblazoned the royal sigil of the North, the golden, cracked but not broken, shield. One of them, a solid man with a thin black beard, shoved a short, balding fellow outside. Another of the soldiers had a woman secured by the arm. Neither the man nor the woman were dressed for the cold. In fact, the woman was wearing a smudged white apron, as if she'd been interrupted while cooking a meal. "Food," Anise's stomach grumbled. "Shut up," Anise thought back at it. "This is not the time."
"Where are they?"
the solid soldier said harshly, pushing the bald, underdressed man. He stumbled and fell. The other soldiers laughed.
"Who?"
the man cried.
"We live alone."
His wife was forced to her knees beside him. A soldier with thick tufts of reddish-brown hair poking from his helmet slid his sword from his belt. He shoved the tip against her throat.
"Last chance. Where are they hiding? In the barn? In the forest? Where?"
The woman started sobbing uncontrollably, the tip of the sword bouncing against her neck and drawing blood. The man clasped his hands together.
"Please, no one is hiding. I'm leaving for Gearhead tomorrow with our next haul. Search everything if you wish, just don't hurt her. Please."
Anise looked at Terrin, who looked back at her. Anise mouthed, "Run?" But Terrin shook his head. Once more, she could see his eyes behind his mask, as black as coal. Something glinted in them, like the reflection of sunlight on silver. He stepped from the trees. Everything felt like it was moving in slow motion as he strode toward the soldiers, who were too focused on their prey to notice Terrin until he was almost upon them, his morning star tracing scathing arcs around his head. One of them turned at the last moment, unloosing a shout just before the spiked steel ball collided with the side of his skull, knocking him to the side. The soldier with the sword was next, trying to raise the blade to block Terrin's next swing, which crashed into him like a thunderbolt. The sword flew from his grasp, and Terrin kicked him in the stomach. One of the other soldiers grabbed Terrin from behind, but he immediately flipped him over his head, slamming him on his back. The fourth and last upright soldier, the dark-bearded leader, tried to flee. Too slow. Terrin took two long strides and whipped the spiked ball around, catching him in the back of the head with a vicious clang. The soldier went down, his helmet flying off, his head caved in. Anise was in shock, her hand over her mouth. At some point she must have stepped out from the cover of the trees, but she couldn't remember having moved at all. She scanned the destruction wrought by the night. The two soldiers who had taken hits to the head weren't moving, and were most likely dead. The soldier Terrin had flipped was also still, although his hand was twitching from time to time. And the red-haired soldier who'd been kicked in the chest was on one knee, trying to fight to his feet. Terrin stalked him like a wolf circling an injured elk, his morning star cutting a long, slow orbit around his head.
"You,"
the soldier said, glaring at the knight through tendrils of greasy hair.
"You're him, the traitor. You're the traitor,"
Terrin growled, and before Anise could utter a single word, he flung his weapon, releasing the chain. The man tried to dodge the blow, but didn't make it, the spiked ball hitting him full in the face before rolling away, leaving a ragged trail of blood. The soldier flopped for a few moments before going still, a crimson pool expanding around his body, a fiery contrast to the packed snow. From behind the knight, the bald man spoke, only he wasn't looking at Terrin.
"He's looking at me," Anise realized. "You're her, aren't you?"
the man asked.
"One of the ones they were looking for. Princess Anise."
Anise opened her mouth to answer him, to lie, but Terin lunged for the man, grabbing him by the throat, picking him up like he weighed no more than air.
No!
Anise cried, running toward him.
Terin, wait!
Terin cocked his head to look at her, but didn't release the man, who was struggling to breathe, his face turning red and then purple. Anise hurdled the woman, who was still crying, blood dribbling down the pale skin of her neck. Anise skidded to a stop just short of Terin, whose chest was heaving beneath his black armour.
"Please, Terin,"
Anise said, reaching out slowly with one hand.
"He's not the enemy. The enemy is down. He's just a tree farmer. Let him go."
Terin stared at her, but something about the gleam in his dark eyes was so foreign to the boys she once knew and the man she'd gotten to know in their makeshift tent that it scared the frozen hell out of her. His eyes boring into her, he squeezed harder. An unnatural gurgling sound rose from the man's lips, his face turning as blue as ice at dusk. Anise stepped forward. She touched his free hand softly, gently. He stiffened, but she didn't withdraw, sliding her fingers up his forearm, his bicep, all the way to his shoulder, and then to the mesh covering his face. Through the mask, she cupped his chin in her hand.
"Please," she said. "You are more than this. I need you to let go."
A rough growl tore from his throat, and for a moment Anise thought he would strike her. But then his shoulders slumped, his fingers unclenched, the bald man unleashing a gasp as he dropped to the cold, hard ground. He lay panting in the snow, clutching at his throat, but Anise wasn't looking at him. She was staring through the slit in Terin's mask, where his eyes were full of horror.
"What have I done?"
he said. 18. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Greece Jolly. Greece awoke to a commotion. Shouts, screams, metallic clangs. What is happening? It was dark, the night spilling through a high window in whatever prison room he'd been confined to. Not a bad place, really. It was better than the Temple of Confession, that was for God's damned sure. For one, it was warmer, and he'd been given back his dirty clothing, although he was still strapped to the bed. His hand, no, his stump, was throbbing something fierce.
"She,"
he said aloud, as another cry split the night.
"Rutting Princess Rhea,"
he thought. He needed to point his anger somewhere, and she was the easiest target. Otherwise, he would have to hate himself. He wondered if they'd killed his sister yet. Her mark was her death sentence, and the Furies likely wouldn't waste time in carrying out their punishment. They certainly hadn't with him, with his hand.
"Oh, Shay, I'm so sorry."
Because the truth was, it was his fault, and he knew it. When he'd first received that note from the princess, he should have burned it or eaten it. Maybe laughed about it, but not acted on it. Not met her. Not kissed her. Stolen her purity like the thief that he was. Not abandoned her at the crypts. All my fault. Sorrow welled up inside him, and he coughed, choking on his guilt and anger and sadness. In that moment, he wanted to die. Screams. Something strange about them. Not war cries. Pain cries. Death cries. Is the city under attack? According to Rhea, her father had declared war on the north because they executed his sister, Queen Sabria Loren. But what if the North had expected that, and decided to attack first? A thought struck him. The first sprig of true hope he'd had since the guards apprehended him. Maybe they haven't killed Shay yet. Before he could truly consider the possibility, the door to his cell flew open and a wide-eyed Rhea burst inside, slamming the barrier behind her. Her chest was heaving and she looked frantic, her hair dishevelled, her long white dressing gown hanging from one shoulder, revealing a moonlit sliver of pale skin that, under other circumstances, would have been a magnet for Greece's lips. "What's happening?" Greece said. "Is the city under attack?" The princess's face was awash with horror.
Yes, no, I don't know. They're dead. So many are dead. Something is here.
She wasn't making sense. The northerners? Did their ships make landfall? Or perhaps they'd entered the west through Raiders Pass, marching around Bethany and straight for Night's End. Rhea's breaths were coming faster and faster, whistling through her teeth. She was in no condition to answer questions, and Greece's window of opportunity was quickly closing. "Help me with these straps," he said. She took a deep breath, and having a task seemed to calm her somewhat. She rushed over, her hands shaking as she pulled and yanked at the leather bindings. More screams rent the night, and Rhea flinched.
"Focus, princess," Greece said.
"One strap at a time. Hurry." She managed to get his right arm free, and then he was able to help her with the chest strap, followed by the four others. His left arm was useless, no better than a padded club, the bandages soaked through with blood. Free, he swung his legs over the sides of the bed and tried to stand. His legs wobbled and he nearly fell, but Rhea steadied him. The room was spinning and his legs felt like raspberry preserves.
"Gods, I can't rutting do this. You must do this," he hissed to himself. "For Shay."
"Please,"
Rhea said, her eyes like melted turquoise gemstones.
"We have to leave."
Screams, shouts, clanging metal.
"Not without my sister. Not without Shay."
Rhea closed her eyes, opened them, nodded.
"I can take you to her."
"Do it." Clutching each other, Greece for balance, Rhea for emotional support, they hobbled to the door. Greece opened it slowly and peeked out. There were dark lumps on the floor, and something wet glistened in the light cast by the hall lamps. Two guards. Dead. Somehow dead.
"What the rot? Something is here,"
Rhea breathed.
"Oh, Roth, it's going to kill us all."
Greece remembered that night at the crypts, the monster with the marked scalp, the dead knights. It had come to finish the job.
"Hurry," Greece said. "We have to find my sister."
They scurried along the corridor, avoiding as much of the blood as they could. It was everywhere. On the floor, on the walls, splattered on the lamp fixtures. It was even dripping from the ceiling in spots. The bodies were scattered like toy soldiers in a child's game. Guards, knights, all dead, most having never even drawn their swords.
"Where are the Furia?"
Greece said. He hadn't really meant it as a question for Rhea, but she answered anyway, hissing under her breath.
"They fled the castle. I saw them from my window. When the screams started, they rode out, led by the three."
The Holy Sisterhood had abandoned the castle to whatever evil was slaughtering at will. Although it clearly wasn't a positive sign that the most capable warriors in Night's End had retreated so swiftly, Greece knew it might mean they hadn't had time to deal with his sister. The thought gave him energy, his legs buoyed up with a new spirit, despite the fear that threatened to pull him into a ball.
"Hurry, hurry, hurry."
They passed through a royal ballroom, the long wooden table set and ready for breakfast. Thankfully, there were no bodies, the room bright with green and red moonlight, which winked through the large glass windows. Through the kitchens they went, the hearth warm and glowing with molten embers. One of the kitchen hands was huddled against the stonework, sobbing.
"Help me," she whispered.
Greece felt bad for the girl, who looked no older than 13, but there was nothing he could do for her now. "Stay here," he said. "Find a place to hide. In a crate, beneath the straw." The girl only cried harder and louder as they left her behind.
"We're close now,"
Rhea advised. They turned a corner, but Greece immediately halted and pulled the princess back.
"What?"
she said.
"What is it?"
He could read the fear in her eyes. So deep, he knew it could paralyze her if he said the wrong thing.
"Nothing," he said. "I just need to catch my breath."
The truth was, he'd seen it. The thing. The monster, its mark glowing pale white in the dim corridor. The creature had pulled a long blade from a knight's chest, letting the man fall before stalking forward. Grease counted to 10 slowly in his head, hoping it was long enough for the monster to have moved on.
One, please pass Shay by, he prayed. Two, three, oh, Roth, if you have any mercy left for a sinner like me, please spare her. Four, five, she is good. Six, she is kind. Seven, her mark was not her choice. Eight, nine, she doesn't even know how to use it. 10.
He pulled the princess into the corridor, scanning the length of the hallway, which was littered with bodies and splashed with blood. The killer was gone.
Oh, Roth,
Rhea murmured. Grease continued his prayer for his sister in his head. He'd never prayed before in his life, and certainly not to Roth, unless he included the times he pretended to pray in the temple while stealing from the collection tin. Now he would pray to any god under the four kingdoms if it might help save his sister. Which way? He asked, looking left and then right. The princess was muttering under her breath, her eyes blank. He grabbed her chin, trying to get her to focus on his eyes.
Rhea, please, which way to my sister?
She looked right, where the corridor was empty and dark. Then left, where the dead guards lay in droves. She pointed toward the corpses, her finger trembling. He grabbed her hand, holding it tightly, trying to calm her.
Not far, she said.
They blazed a winding path down the stone hallway, once more avoiding the dead. Grease tried not to look at them, but couldn't seem to stop. A burly knight's helmet had been cloven in half, his skull shattered. Another had no noticeable wounds, but his face was frozen in a silent scream, stricken with fear. Some were missing limbs. Like me, Grease thought darkly. The corridor felt endless, iron doors passing on both sides. Cells, Grease realized. Cells for the worst criminals, those sentenced to death. Finally, Rhea stopped and said,
Here.
She motioned to a cell door on the left.
We need the key.
A guard was slumped against the wall.
Help me,
Grease said, squatting down and patting along the man's waist.
I can't,
Rhea said. She was frozen in place. Frustration boiled over.
I only have one goddamn hand, so please help me find the rutting key.
Tears poured down Rhea's cheeks, the dam finally bursting. Grease would have felt bad for making her cry, but Shay. Thankfully, the princess dropped to her knees and joined the search, sobbing the whole time. Something jangled.
Pull them out,
Grease said, trying not to shout and upset her more. She did as she was told, extracting a keyring with a dozen keys on it. Together they stood up and the princess tried the first key. No good. The second, nay. The third wouldn't even fit. Screams echoed down the corridor. It was taking too long. The fourth key turned the lock and Rhea actually managed a thin smile of relief. Grease licked his lips and shouldered through the door, shouting, Shay! As he entered. The cell was empty, save for discarded iron manacles chained to the floor, their edges crusted with dried blood. Shay was gone. They were too late. Princess Rhea wouldn't leave him alone, hovering behind Grease as he made his way toward the main entrance leading out of the nightmarish castle. He refused to look at her, refused to listen to her sobs, refused to let her grab his hand, his only hand. Shay was gone, and it was both their fault. They'd both wronged each other, and Shay had been caught in the crossfire. He felt numb, devoid of emotion. He stepped over corpses, splashing through their blood. None of it mattered. Rhea tripped and lost her shoe, crying out, and when she started to turn back to retrieve it, Grease finally grabbed her hand. No time, he said, pulling her forward. He descended a staircase, halting halfway when he saw a shadow blocking the way out. Rhea crashed into him from behind, and he nearly tumbled down the steps, uttering a curse. The figure wobbled slightly, as if off balance.
Father?
Rhea said, hope in her voice. That's when Grease noticed the golden spikes of the crown atop the shadow's head. King Gil Loren, the Holy King, slowly turned around. The king's throat was a crimson smile, sliced open from ear to ear. His head lolled back, flopping grotesquely before tearing from his neck and hitting the floor with a hollow thud. His body followed, crumpling like a poor child's rag doll. Rhea screamed, clutching Greece so tightly her nails dug into his arms. Greece felt hollowed out, but he was aware enough to catch the princess before she toppled down the stairs. With only one hand, he felt awkward and off-kilter, but he managed to clutch her arm with one hand while steadying her with his stump. He forced her to stumble down the steps to the atrium, and then past her father's decapitated corpse, blocking her view with his body. He pushed out into the night, where it was beginning to rain, a fine mist cleansing the earth. A phrase he'd heard uttered by Sir Barrow in the Cryptlands entered his mind.
King's plague.
The northern king was dead, as was his queen, Rhea's aunt. And now King Lorraine, too. After what he'd seen tonight, Greece didn't believe in coincidences, and monsters were no longer confined to childish dreams. Huddled against his side, Princess Rhea was babbling nonsensically to herself.
"Come on," he muttered. "Let's get you somewhere safe."
She didn't acknowledge that he'd spoken. Didn't even look at him. Her eyes glazed over, blinking against the rain. Not surprisingly, the guards at the castle gates were dead, struck down where they stood. Instead of cranking open the enormous gate, Greece led Rhea through a side door typically used by small troops of guards entering and exiting the castle. Somehow the rain seemed to come down harder the moment they were outside the walls. But this was his territory now, and Greece didn't falter, even when they were drenched from head to toe in seconds. He headed for the main thoroughfare, counting on the Furia to have chosen speed over stealth as they retreated from the castle. He didn't care what happened to him. He needed to know whether they'd killed Shay before they fled. If so, he wanted her body. He needed to bury her himself. Only then could he die. After the horrors and death inside the castle, it was strange seeing Night's End so peaceful. A number of townsfolk were milling about the cobblestone streets beneath canvas awnings, speaking in hushed voices. There were no bodies, no lakes of blood. Evidently Death's servant had no interest in the commoners. Greece marched up to the first familiar face he saw, Jordan Vaughan, a bootmaker. Greece wouldn't call him a friend, but he wasn't an enemy either. He grabbed the thin man's arm. "Did you see the Furia?" he asked. Vaughan's storm-grey eyes flicked from Greece to the princess, widening with realization.
"But she's the... that's her. You've got the..."
"She's Princess Rhea, I," Greece said. "I don't have time to explain. Did the Furia pass by or not?" Vaughan licked his dry lips, still staring at the princess.
"A night to remember," he muttered. "I heard their horses first. I'm a light sleeper as it is, and they charged past like a royal battalion chasing the enemy. There were so many. I've never seen so many together at one time, all wearing red. At the front were the three."
Greece remembered the way the three had laughed at him in the Temple of Confession, the way they'd held him down, the way the leader had raised the blade. "They were headed south?" Greece asked, shaking away the dark memory.
"Roth, what happened to your hand?"
Vaughan said. Greece held up his stump.
"I let someone borrow it. Now please, were they headed south?"
The old man nodded grimly.
"I watched them go. We all did. Then we heard screams from the castle. Was there anyone with them?"
Greece held his breath as soon as he asked the question. Vaughan frowned.
"Like who? It was just Furia. They were magnificent. Frightening, but magnificent. Like Roth's army charging into battle.
More like retreating." A woman who must have overheard their strange conversation drifted closer.
"I saw something," she said.
"What?"
"One of the three was holding someone in front of her. At first, methinks 'twas a sack, but then I saw a face peeking out. 'Twas the damnedest, well, forgive me language, thing. The girl was bundled up in a blanket, her hair spilling out the sides like streamers."
"What colour?" Greece asked.
"What are you saying now?"
the woman said, her eyes narrowing. "What colour was her hair?" The woman's eyes lit up.
"Oh, yes. Lovely hair, that one. Even in the moonlight, it was clear as day, like golden strawberries it